The Waini writers acknowledge and pay our respects to the Kaurna people, the traditional custodians whose ancestral lands we gather on. We acknowledge the deep feelings of attachment and relationship of the Kaurna people to country and extend this acknowledgement to Torres Strait Islander and all First Nations people. We respect and value their past, present and ongoing connection to the land and cultural beliefs.
This podcast episode includes content that is not suitable for ages 16 and under, such as swearing and sexual content. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Waini Writers. I am Abby Guy, and I'm here with my co-host,
Harry Stewart.
And today we're doing our very first book club. What book are we doing, Harry?
We're doing Bride by Ali Hazelwood.
We are. This is our very first book club, and you wouldn't know, I've asked this to Harry before. I can't ask Harry this question as if I haven't already asked him. We had technical difficulties before, so we're re-recording just the intro. But Harry, how did you feel about doing a book club for the first time?
I liked that we did something, one, that we did something different.
Yeah.
And then two, that we had like an extended period of time to think about what we were going to say.
Yes. Yeah. Because this was a three week long project rather than a one day think about what might go on in the hour that we're on the podcast.
And also we do this naturally by ourselves most weeks in our PhD. So this was kind of nice to work towards doing something like this together.
Yes.
I was like, oh, well, I'm going to think about what I want to say with this. But then also it's not just my opinion and people's opinions and articles and book reviews that I'm reading online.
Yep.
I'm going to get Abby's opinion and we're going to have a full conversation about this.
Full conversation. Absolutely. Okay. So for those who do not know, I am going to give first of all, if you haven't read the book and you are really keen on reading the book and you're worried about spoilers, this isn't the episode for you. Go away, read the book, come back and listen to this.
100%.
Because we're going to be talking about literally everything. There is no limits.
There are very few things we're going to leave out.
Exactly. we'll see. On that note as well, this is not for immature audiences. Probably will be speaking quite explicit. If you are my dad who picked up one of our podcast episodes the other day, I got a text from him and he was like, it was something about the podcast and I was like, are you listening? He goes, yeah, right until you got to like this specific stuff, like it was probably sexual. And he was like, and then I stopped.
That's so
anyway,
fair.
So we
reveal a fair bit on this.
We do, yeah. So if you are my dad, don't listen to this one, Dad.
Dad, if you're out there, maybe, yeah.
This is not for you. But yeah, I'm going to give a potted description of what Bride is about. And then I think we just fucking dive into it.
Yeah.
So Bride is an arranged marriage trope. It's a paranormal romance and it's between a vampire and a werewolf. So the vampire gets an arranged to marry the werewolf Alpha. And there's like a underlying mystery aspect to this. And there's a reason that the main character, her name is Misery. We'll get into that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
There's a reason the main character decides that, yes, I will consensually agree to this arranged marriage. And then she's kind of following this mystery line in the arranged
marriage. Yeah, she's got a motivation from the first page.
Yeah.
Well, actually, from the first chapter.
Yeah. That's pretty much it. Did you want to add anything? That's the base of the storyline.
That's basic, yeah. I just wanted to say that I agree with Ruby Dixon, who did like a, what do we call them these days?
An endorsement on the cover.
She says that Hazelwood unleashes her sparkling voice and wit on a paranormal Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, and if you were to compare it, it's kind of like
it's
that.
Not
it's
a
like
bad
an
idea.
Enemies to lovers.
Yeah.
We're on opposing family sides. The
yeah.
vampires.
Yeah, exactly. The vampires and the werewolf.
The wares.
Yeah. The wearers. Yeah, that's right. Not
which
werewolves.
Which I find is so wares. Funny because the were in werewolves is human.
Wait,
human
what?
Wolves.
Oh, right.
Werewolves.
Werewolves,
and so they're
yeah.
kind of, it's kind of redundant to just call them wares.
Wares, yeah, because they're not.
Because they're wolves.
That's so true. That's like an AO3 thing, though. That's a fanfic thing.
Yeah.
When they shorten the names for like,
I think it's just,
without
yeah.
really understanding.
Yeah, and yeah. like trying to make it a vampire werewolf story without making it the same as all other vampire werewolf stories. You know, they're vampires spelt with a Y and they're wares.
And they're wares, yeah. yeah. And they, yeah. yeah. Yeah, that's true. And they have like, there's a lot more of like a political structure to the, this is what I found really weird. Straight up, let's dive in.
We're just going to go straight into it.
We're just
going to
go straight in.
I can't everything hold back. Everything else will come out as we go.
They just made the vampires like Ali Hazelwood made the vampire society really like political and smart and cunning, and then made the wares really like, I don't know, not relaxed, but really
quite chill.
Quite chill.
Yeah.
Very
they
like
have, they have some politics. There's a rival pack, so to speak, and there's politics. But like
kind of
not really.
Not really politics though, because it was just kind of like, who's the strongest?
Yeah. Well, that's werewolves for you, isn't it?
Yeah, but is it? Like, does it have
does
to be?
Does it have to be?
Like, they don't exist.
So you were looking for something a little bit more complex.
Yeah.
Especially
because you can tell that she's trying to make it a bit more, like it's trying to make it different from another vampire and werewolf story.
Yes.
Like trying to break the normal conventions and stereotypes that exist in a lot of this media.
Yeah.
And then it was just kind of like,
I feel like she's leaning into them a little bit though. Like that's that's the fan base, right? So you lean into the werewolf vampire lore because that's what the fan base likes.
Are used to.
Yeah. There are some minor changes, but
Yeah.
I
already wanted more.
Yeah.
Especially from the first read.
Yeah.
Because I've read this, what, 2.5 times, I reckon.
Yes.
I read it again over the weekend when I was going through my notes. And I was like, I wanted more from, especially from the offset.
This is my, one of my notes for the book. Should we say whether we like the book or not? Or should we get to it?
Yeah. We can say if we like the book or not, and then we can delve into our reasons why and what we didn't
like. Okay, beautiful. Yeah. We're going out of order here. But the book has 4.2 stars on Goodreads, and it's got 20,000 reviews.
That is impressive.
It's a pretty new book. It's only been out like a month.
I think it came out Feb 13th.
Yeah, exactly. So it's very, very well loved. And from what I have seen, my knowledge on this is like book talk and looking at Goodreads and that sort of stuff. People love it. They're like frothing for this book.
Really?
They are, yeah. People really, really love it. It's quite divisive. So, I mean, it depends on whether you're a fan fiction reader first and foremost and then got into your trad published. Like, I feel like if you're a fan fiction reader, this is a book that you will love, depending on the type of fan fiction reader you are.
Very, very true. Very true. It sticks to a lot of the tropes, and it has a very, like, digestible reading style. Like,
That's a nice way to put it.
Fan fiction style to it, which means that it is quick to read. And it was quick to read for a slow reader, even like myself.
It is a very quick read. I read it in a matter of hours. Like, I read it in one sitting.
Yeah, I think I read it in 2 days for me.
Which which is really quick
really
for you.
Really quick for
absolutely,
me.
Absolutely, yeah. Like, that impressive.
Catch out.
But yeah, did you like the book?
I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would I go back and read it again? Or would it be something that I would have picked up if we weren't
Would you have read
review?
It again if you weren't reviewing it?
No.
Yeah.
Probably not.
Yeah.
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 It's not. It also, like, I like Ali Hazelwood. I think her romances are really good. Like,
I love her STEM romances. I really liked Love Hypothesis. I loved
Love on the Brain.
That was
a bloody good book. Mm. Well, fucking good book. Sorry, I forget we're on the pod.
Yeah.
It was a fucking good book.
Yeah.
And I like Hazelwood's style of writing because it's also very easily digestible. Mm. And her characters are really, really, like, you're really quick to either love or hate them. Yeah. And I don't think she really cares if you hate them or if you love them. She just wants you to follow them.
No, she just wants you to go with it. You know?
And I felt like that was the same for this. Like, even though I'm not a big fan fiction reader, and I'm not very big on the paranormal, I'm not really that interested in paranormal romance, and I don't really like vampires, and I don't really like werewolves.
So in other words, this was not the book. But Harry was not the market for this book.
I was not the market, but I expected to hate it more. And I think it's because it was Ali Hazelwood.
Yeah.
I was oh, this still has Hazelwood's, like a bit of her style to it, a bit of her her easily consumable dialogue, there's a plethora of characters in this novel as well. And I will admit that in her contemporary romance, there doesn't tend to be that many characters, but there were a fair few in here.
There are. Yeah. I don't know if she was going for like a found family trope, but Misery, the main character, is sort of like no one in her life has really been family to her except the one character, Selena, who is her best friend, and she lived with Serena.
She lived
for
with
a
her
while.
In the human world.
Yeah, because for those who haven't read it, Misery becomes a collateral, which is the vampire, werewolf, and human societies all live kind of in conjunction with each other. They're in their own territories, but they kind of coexist. They're not, murdering and maiming.
This is one thing that I didn't pick up on either of my reads.
Okay.
Do all humans know that vampires exist?
Yeah.
They
do? My understanding. Yeah, yeah. Because
then they also seemed so surprised when they found out she was a vampire and they didn't know a lot of information about
them. Because they don't live amongst each other.
No.
But yeah.
I still feel like if you knew that they existed, you would kind of know what they do and don't like.
Yeah, maybe, but Misery was disguising herself, yeah, right? That's she shaves off her teeth and hides her ears.
Yeah.
So, unless they're actively like, I just don't think they expect for there to be a vampire in their midst.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, the humans didn't seem naive. Oh, no, no, sorry. The humans did seem naive.
But whilst
the wares and the vampires knew everything about each other.
Well, that's another point I want to get to. We're bouncing, but that's another point I wanted to get into as well, which we'll come back to. I've written a note, so we will remember that, is about the wares and the knowledge that they have of each other because they don't have a lot. And I think that's irritating.
That's what I mean by, like, I was like, if I knew that there were vampires and werewolves in society, right, but not amongst us, like we all lived in conjunction with each other off, you know, with borders and
you
all that type of shit like that.
You would have some sort of knowledge.
You would understand at least a bit about them.
You would.
Like how we know about our world and like different cultures and things like that.
Yeah,
like,
I think when Misery goes into the werewolf world, right? Yeah. She marries in and is taken over the border, which is, I think, a river or a lake.
A lake, that I think, separates them. And it's nothing crazy. You just don't cross it, absolutely.
Or I don't know. There are deaths, but they don't seem
that big of an issue. Politically, yeah.
But she goes over into this world. She knows nothing about werewolves. She doesn't understand werewolf culture. She doesn't know anything about werewolves whatsoever. And the excuse that she gives for that is that their firewalls are really good. And so when she searches them on the internet, she actually can't get through the firewalls or anything. Like, they're really secretive with their information. But that's only internet information, right? Yeah. Like, there is so much word of mouth and stuff. Like, stuff would get around.
You would know
about the werewolves.
And if this existed, you would have humans writing books and vampires writing books about werewolves and, like, spy agencies and government.
The information exchange between the territories. To me, they live, like, border to border.
Border to border, not far away from each other at all. Border to border.
And I feel like you would know the basics of that species, so to speak.
I wanted more of the overall world as well.
Yeah.
Like, I want to know how this actually works.
Yeah.
Because as far as I'm concerned, I'm thinking about a couple hundred kilometers spot of land divided into three.
Into three. Yeah, that was another thing as well. Like, and I feel like it's hard because this is a romance, right?
Yeah.
And so it's not trying to be a paranormal novel. It's trying to be a romance. So it's following the romance beat.
Very true. But for the start, you're like, you're setting up this whole world and the romance isn't actually there.
Yeah, the world
building.
Until
like chapter fucking 12.
Yeah. Well, it's a slow burn.
It's
right?
a slow burn, but a slow, slow, slow burn.
I didn't find it that slow. I thought it was
fine. You really
did? Well, sometimes you read not like a series and they don't get together to like the third book.
Oh, I fucking hate that.
Yeah.
But
so
I was like, where is the
slow.
Romance? Tell me that you find him attractive. Not that she stinks because he says
oh
that she
Oh my God.
Stinks. Which is so funny.
I'm learning how hard it is to review a book because
the amount of
topics that I bounce between. I was just about to say the world building's thin because of the romance, I think. And so readers who don't typically read fantasy, like her readers who would read her STEM stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
She builds a lot in STEM though, I think.
That's what I think.
Builds
I was like,
lot.
Allie Hazelwood has this in her back pocket and she's not using it.
And she hasn't used it.
She's not using it because her STEM stuff can be so confusing when she gets into the sciencey side of stuff. And she just doesn't dip into as much knowledge or not knowledge, like, I don't know, give us more of the world.
But you get like work culture.
Yeah.
The work culture in the Love Hypothesis, right? Where
absolutely.
You understand where she works and how it's affecting her and what the culture's like and all of these little characters that are around.
You learn so much about science
so
that you wouldn't
it.
Know.
Through
but I don't
the characters.
Yeah, I don't know a lot about the werewolf vampire world.
No fucking idea how this world works.
Yeah.
All I know is roughly
and
what
anything
she tells
outside
me.
Of those three small territories. It feels like a coin.
Yes.
And the rest of the world is like a whole coin purse and we're only getting one coin.
One little coin.
Yeah.
And she's the most like, she is the daughter of the most powerful councilman who's like the head of the nest essentially of the council,
of the,
which
yeah,
is the vampire,
the vampire
world, right?
World, yeah.
And she's so powerful.
And it's one building?
One building.
It's one building. I know that there is probably a huge amount of buildings.
Yeah.
But we get shown one building.
One building. And I don't get anything about what the territory is like or if the vampire world is like really dark and they've just got blinds everywhere or whatever. I was so confused about that.
Yeah. The way that I read it is this one vampire building is in the middle of the human territory.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
I felt like it was right there, and yet they don't know anything about each other.
They don't know anything about each other. But then also the humans know about the the vampires.
Because they have that collateral,
and,
right?
Yeah, and the governor of the human territory and, you know, her father. Mm-hmm. I always forget his name because she always just says father.
I don't know his name.
Yeah, I can never remember his name. Councilman whatever.
Mm.
Well, anyway, Misery's father is... let's just call him Councilman Lark, because I know that's the last name. Yeah. Yep. So Councilman Lark is in cahoots with the governor because he's been, like, almost controlling him for political power.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you're right. I'm like, do they live next to each other in a building? Like, is he in government house?
There is not enough world building for me to fully grasp it.
Exactly.
In my mind. And so I just wish that she had done a little bit more in that regard.
A little bit more. Because I feel like it would have lifted a whole section of that plot. And I would have cared a lot more if I understood how big some of these moves that are being made are.
Yes.
So that was the letdown for me, was everything that built around the romance.
Well, yeah, because let's compare this to Twilight, right? Because werewolves, vampires.
Werewolves, vampires, humans.
It's a very direct, a very direct comparison. I feel like granted there are several books to Twilight, it's a series. Yeah. But I feel like even from the first book, I know so much about the world that they're existing in.
100%.
And yet I don't feel that in this book.
I didn't feel that in this book at all. Yeah. I didn't hate Misery and Lo together. Because Misery was a very strong protagonist, I thought.
That's a very good segue into the question you asked me earlier, which is how do you feel about the romance? And I just completely skipped over it.
Well, no, because we have to establish why overall we don't think it quite worked. And I think it is the world building that lets us down.
I think so. Because as you were just about to say, the romance itself, it works. The relationship between the two of them. Yeah. I liked it. I found it harder to be in love with their romance because Lo wasn't my kind of guy.
No, exactly.
He wasn't my type.
Yeah. But I thought that I liked a couple things about their relationship. One that was that Misery was a very strong protagonist, right?
Yeah.
Like, Lo was a bit of a wet blanket.
Yeah.
For an alpha. Like, I was a bit like,
Okay. Very interesting, because we're going to our next episode is on toxic relationships in romance.
It is.
And
too.
So saying that he's a wet blanket for an alpha, is that because you felt like he wasn't alpha enough? He's kind of supposed to be this big alpha masculine guy, right? And I feel like if you're going to do that, you may as well lean into it.
Or it was, I don't think it was that he was missing toxic mask. I just think it's that I found, like, I never really understood what kind of person he was.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't really picture how he spoke. Yeah. I couldn't really, like, if I had to tell you what kind of person he was, apart from just being an alpha, he felt very two-dimensional to me.
Yeah.
And he had I had a couple of people that he cared about, but I never really thought he cared about them.
He does feel like a copy-paste.
That makes sense.
Of the typical Ally Hazelwood, broody, very tall, very large.
Very large.
Constantly told how large they are.
Yes.
Male protagonist that Ally Hazelwood writes.
Without any personality.
Yeah, right. But I feel like that, again, is an intentional thing. Like, Ally Hazelwood sells on her name, right? And I've seen people saying that, I don't care that this is a rinse and repeat of every Ally Hazelwood plot that ever existed. I'll eat it up every time.
But also, she Ally Hazelwood is so clever because there are those tiny changes that make it feel like a whole new book. Until you finish it.
Yeah, and then you're like, wow.
And then you're like, God damn
it. I really did just chew through another one.
Yeah, she's done it again.
She's done it.
But she is brilliant because of that. Like, I'm not, I won't shit on her for saying that she's, you know, rinse and repeating plot structure, essentially.
Yeah.
Because it fucking works.
It does.
It's genius.
Yeah.
But that was the only thing that I don't think I really loved was I wanted to like Lo more.
Mm.
And I felt like Misery was kind of engaging. She was randomly complex in some parts. Like, she was really smart, but then also really kind of dumb.
Yeah, I think the dumb is supposed to be her quirky, but I found her very naive.
Naive.
And her lack of information and her lack of understanding of some concepts really frustrated me. Like, her not understanding that she doesn't stink. He's in love with you.
He's in love. Yeah. Yes. So.
That I found extremely frustrating. And my question for you, because this is an Omegaverse book, right? Like this is built on fan fiction culture. And that's why it's so loved, I think. Hmm. Did you know that Misery was his mate from chapter one? From prologue?
Not from chapter one.
You didn't?
No.
Oh, but I see, that's wild to me because I knew from prologue.
Oh, yeah. See, because I haven't read a lot of it.
To me, it was frustratingly obvious and no one was getting it.
It was the moment that I think it's not far in when he says that his mate is Gabby, whatever her name is, that went over to marry Owen.
Okay. Well, that's way further in than I thought it would.
I think it's only like six chapters. Seven chapters or something like that when she's talking to Owen on the computer screen.
Yep.
Yeah. And he talks about when they're sitting at the, I think they're sitting at the kitchen table or something like that. And he says, oh, yeah, I gave up my mate to go over to there. Right. Blah, 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 blah. And I was
and like, no,
I was like, yeah, I don't think you gave up your mate to go over there. And I was like, and I don't think you have a mate. And I was like, oh, see, a mate is Misery. Because in that same chapter, he says that she needs to, like, they're staring at each other intently, and then he says that she stinks and she needs to go and wash again.
Yeah, right.
Like, you should probably go and shower again, go and clean yourself up. And she goes, oh, the stink. And he's like, yeah, sorry. And I was like, oh, no, gross. This is a mating thing. Oh, fuck, she's the mate.
Yeah.
And
right.
I was like, oh.
This is page 9, and this is when I knew, oh, they're mates. First of all, you go into it and you're like, obviously they're going to be mates. Like, that's the obvious.
But I don't get the whole mating thing.
Yeah. This is where I knew, and it's page 9, prologue, and this is where he sees her for the first time at the altar.
Yeah.
Right? And she goes, I square my shoulders, a small distance separates us, and I let my eyes pin his as I close it, which is how I see it all happen in real time. Pupils widening, brow furrowing, nostrils flaring. He watches me like I'm something made of maggots and takes one deep breath, slow, then another, sharp. The moment I'm delivered to the altar, his expression widens into something that looks, for an instant, indecipherably shaken, and I knew it. I knew that Wes didn't like vampires, but this feels beyond that. It feels like pure, hard, personal contempt. And I was like, yeah, he's doing that because you're his mate, and he's just realised.
Oh!
In every Omegaverse, because this is just werewolf,
this
right?
Is just
which
werewolf,
is something
yeah.
we can get into as well. This isn't an Omegaverse fiction, and that's how it's being marketed.
Which
is very clever, right? Because it's the closest thing I think we have in trad published work to Omegaverse because it's got the werewolves in it. Mm. But the Omegaverse itself, to dip into fan fiction culture, is like alphas, betas, omegas, right?
Yeah.
And this only has alphas because it's set in a werewolf world. Mm. There's no mention of betas and omegas, right? And so if you really want to dip your toe into Omegaverse, it's way crazier. I feel like this is what you can get away with. But this is just werewolf stuff, right?
This is just werewolves with a vampire put into it.
Yeah. But with your werewolf novels, if you've read them, when they meet their mate, they can tell because of a smell.
Oh, like a pheromone thing.
Yeah, like a pheromone thing. And then their inner wolf, they normally have an inner wolf, which is so funny to me that this is from a vampire's perspective and you don't get it. Because when you read werewolf fan fictions, they have their wolf is its own person. And so it tells them stuff in its head. Which is what I expected going into this book, and I didn't get it.
And
that was
it.
Fine, because it's from a vampire's perspective.
Yeah.
But, and normally the werewolf is like, mine. Like, that is ours. And that's how we know. So in that moment where he's breathing deeply and he's staring at her and he's like,
he's visibly shaken
for a second. I'm like, that's because he's just realized she's his mate. And so I knew from the get-go. And so it was frustrating to me that she was like, oh, he thinks I stink. You know?
Well, because that's what I thought. I was just like, oh, he's got a really strong sense of smell because he's a werewolf. And I was like, and she's stinky.
She's a stinky gal. She needs to bath all the time.
And then I was like, oh, hang on, this is weird because like, she's like, oh, I know that they don't like vampires, but I didn't know that we had a smell to us.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah, I guess that is a bit weird. Like, is Ali Hazelwood about to say that vampires are stinky?
No, not at all.
You go, I smell a vampire.
He just gets a smell on her.
He just gets a smell.
Like, oh, that's my mate.
Yeah, right.
So I knew then, and there are snippets of conversation he has with his like offsiders where they're like, you know, we didn't know this was going to happen and maybe we should put her in a different house. And he's like, no.
Oh.
And it's like, oh.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it's really interesting to me to ask someone who hasn't read in that genre, how they you felt about that. Because for me, knowing it wasn't a I'm in on a secret. It was like, oh my God, Misery, you're so dumb.
Oh, okay.
Do you know what I mean? It's so obvious.
Yeah, I guess that stuff that's like links to that idea of the world building as well, because you would think that those things would be known if these people lived together.
Yeah.
Or no, not lived together.
Together, but like lived, they coexist in a way. Yeah.
It's just, it feels like a shortening, a deliberate flattening of the world building to avoid plot holes or to carry the plot forward.
Yeah.
Which was a bit like, oh, for God's sake. Like, you know, the misconceptions about vampires from, I think, is it Serena?
Serena? It might actually be.
Yeah, I can't quite, I think it's.
Serena.
Yeah, Serena. It's Serena. From Serena when she finds out that she's a vampire.
Oh, yeah. Well, she knows that she's a vampire.
Yeah, and then she asks all those questions like, you know, do you actually catch on fire in the sunlight?
Yeah.
And she's
like, no. All the questions that we would ask a vampire. Yeah, do you sleep in a coffin?
Yeah. And I was like, that's all really, really good stuff. Like, that makes sense from a human perspective.
Yeah.
But then they've got a bureau, a human bureau about the vampires, and they like, you know...
They swap. A vampire goes and lives with the humans, and a human goes and lives with the vampires, so that, you know, peace remains. Because if anything happens, we'll kill your vampire our territory. Yeah. So surely they would have knowledge purely from that. It's not like the vampire's going over there and pretending
that,
you know, they're not going over there and sleeping in a coffin every day to keep the rumor alive.
Yeah.
You know.
So it was just kind of like, that stuff annoyed me, and I feel like it was deliberately squashed.
Yeah,
it was deliberately kept confusing so that we could focus more on other things.
Yeah, but instead, I said, you're focusing on the romance plotline, right?
But all I could think about was, because the romance relied so heavily on this idea of not understanding each other, that it kind of seemed, when that seemed like it was disappointing, I was like, oh, okay, you should know this.
Yeah.
You should know this type of information about each other. You should be fully fucking prepped when you go into the where territory. With like a somebody should be running you through exactly how their society works and what to keep in touch for, because you're like the daughter of one of the fucking most powerful vampires. Yeah. So you should have a whole fucking run through before you step up on that altar and go to that territory.
Well, she talks about, right, how she's tried to get in contact with the werewolf and she wanted to meet the alpha prior to the wedding. And they're like, no, he's busy. Why would we do that? And I understand that, because the first meeting at the altar is like...
Yeah. Oh my God.
Like the most tension, right?
But the vampires should have an expert on the werewolves if they're age-old enemies.
If they're communicating enough to do a wedding, they should know.
They should know
about the werewolf culture. Like it doesn't make make sense.
That frustrated me a lot.
Yeah.
What did you think about the characters?
Okay. Misery. I quite liked Misery. The humor is very millennial humor, right?
Very millennial humor.
But I kind of, in the context, I enjoyed it. I thought it was funny. Yeah. At certain points. There are a couple lines that I quite like. And so Misery's your typical quirky Ally Hazelwood lead.
Yeah.
She's
different enough to be edgy, but not different enough to be that edgy.
Yeah. My favourite character is actually her brother.
You liked Owen, yeah.
Yeah, his name is Owen, which is funny because Misery and Owen. Yeah. Like, I saw this online, but you picture Misery wearing, like, old Victorian dresses and stuff, right?
Yeah.
And then Owen's just this guy in cargos and khakis.
Yeah.
You know?
So fucking relaxed. Yeah. And, like, the heir to the fucking, like, councilman, you know, empire.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I felt like, I think you were saying off, like, off camera, fucking off recording that, like, Owen should have been called Omen. And I fucking agree with that. Because what?
I did.
Yeah.
Because Misery and Omen.
And he was like expected.
Yes.
Right? Like,
he was the expected child. Yeah.
So he
should
be.
And they're twins.
Yeah. And they're twins.
So
Misery
and Omen would have been. But I feel like maybe it's intentional that he's just Owen.
That he's just called Owen. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I liked him at the start because I thought he was a really clever, well-written character. Right? Like, he's like this sarcastic, very dry, really doesn't give
like
a shit about
humor.
These things.
Yeah.
And then he disappears because I know that he's not. The like at the head of the plot,
yeah,
and then is like dribbled in and kind of
in through communications that they have. Like,
and he kind of seems to lose,
the fun
parts that he had at the start. Like, I was like, oh, this would be funny with Owen.
Oh, I loved it. He made these jokes, and I highlighted exactly two things in this book, and both of them are Owen jokes. Because his sister's marrying his vampire sister is marrying a werewolf, right? Yeah. And I was imagining this. And I was like, if my sibling was marrying a werewolf and it was kind of taboo to do so, I would be making these jokes. Fucking hell. So he would say stuff like, I hope they vaccinated you for rabies while they were at it. And like, where is it? This one. He goes, hope you packed a lint roller. I heard they're shed. And like, it's just that sort of stuff that felt like actual sibling rivalry, yeah, or like sibling humor that you would have between each other.
And that's the early on stuff where you kind of realize, like, that's when I like Owen.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the duck theory, right? For me, which I don't, you looked at me like, what the fuck is the duck
theory?
The duck theory is that, like, if you introduce a character in the very, very beginning, your readers are like ducks. And so they imprint on the first character they meet.
Yeah.
Right? And the first characters we meet are Misery and her brother.
Mm.
And so when you lose her brother, I was like, ah, but he was the funny character.
Yeah, exactly. Because you know? I was like, Misery falls flat alongside Owen, and Owen's really interesting.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, this just seemed a bit.
And then his plot later was just, what the?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, when they meet, when Owen and Gab and Lo and Misery meet. Yeah.
Do you know what I would be really, really interested in? Because this book has potential for other books to come out of it,
yes,
right?
I like think the second Serena book would be really good.
Yeah.
And Cone?
I would love a romance between Owen and Gabby.
Yeah, so would I. I would love
to hear about Gabby living with the vampires and what's been going on with, because Owen and Gabby, when you meet them again, they seem close. I get the idea. They're a little bit, you know.
They're so different to each other. But then also Gabby's kind of like the same as Owen, but in the werewolf society.
Yeah, Gabby's like, so chill.
Nobody
really seems to care that Gabby's hanging with the vampires.
Yeah, exactly. And she's just offered up so that they can protect Anna.
Yeah.
Like, so that, you know, like, Lo can be like, oh, this is the closest person to me, this random werewolf called Gabby. Like, just take her.
Exactly.
And she seems so unfazed.
So unfazed.
I vibed her.
I would love to know what's going on over there.
And it's, and it sucks because when they all meet up as a little group, when Owen says that, like, I'm going to challenge father, like, Councilman Lark, and I'm going to take this whole fucking thing. Owen and Gabby are more interesting than Misery and Lo in that conversation.
Right.
And I was like, this just sucks because I've just spent 20 chapters with Misery and Lo, and I've just seen these two for a little bit.
And you found them
fucking
more
like I find them more interesting because they are closer. They're touching skin when they're talking, and she's cutting in on the conversation that Owen's trying to have with Misery.
Yeah,
like they're like a relationship.
Like, oh my god, there's something there, and I want to know about it. So I hope another book comes out
and it's
about that.
That sucked ass because I was like, God, fucking damn it! Like, you've got a really good character here, and you haven't used him well enough for us to care.
Yeah.
Ugh, which frustrated me.
How did you feel about Anna?
Oh, little Anna.
Yeah.
The 7-year-old Anna.
Is she 7?
Yeah, she's tiny.
I know she's little. I know she's tiny. Pretty sure she was like smaller than that. 7. Okay.
I think she's like 7. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought she was kind of funny.
Yeah.
But also like a bit useless.
See, I'm going to be a terrible judge of this because I hate children.
Yeah,
and so
I hate children as well.
I'm trying to read this really nice romance and this child keeps butting in, which I guess is the point.
Yeah, it is the point, yeah.
But I also felt like she was a tool that was used by to kind of soften Lo.
Yeah.
Like it's just, which I think is maybe not necessary, but like a useful way of doing so because he's this big alpha and she wants him to look like he's really kind still on the inside, right?
Yeah.
Like he's still a kind man, even though he has this alpha role position. Mm. Alpha role, I guess, alpha is what you would call him, like an alpha cinnamon roll.
Cinnamon roll, yeah.
But I feel like that's what she was for.
Yeah, I knew she was important the moment she came in because I was like, you don't chuck this little 7-year-old child in a story just to do something like what Lo did.
Yeah.
And so then they made her important for 2 chapters.
Yeah, I thought it was really, I liked this character. And then
the reveal.
She is
who Serena was investigating.
Yeah, there's a reveal that her friend who has gone missing, who Misery is following up and thinks might have been taken into the werewolf territory or
potentially the killed werewolves, by Lo.
Yeah, or the werewolves are in on it. She finds out her friend, Serena. God, it's so hard to follow plots.
I know. I'm
her
like,
friend, Serena, was actually investigating Anna, this 7-year-old, because she's a reporter and Anna is half werewolf, half human.
Yeah. And so the reveal that this is the person that Serena had left a note about, not Lo, because Misery had thought that when she found the note from Serena saying L.E. Moreland, that she was actually talking about Lo Moreland, and that he was like, it was a note saying that she'd either gone to see him or that that was the person that had taken her.
Yeah.
Because like, it's kind of like scrawled essentially. Turns out, yeah, she's investigating Liliana Estermond.
Yeah. But the minute stuff gets like dangerous, they just boot Anna off to go stay with somewhere. Yeah. She disappears until the end of the book.
There's that little kidnapping attempt, which I actually didn't hate that plot point because it was like, oh, here you go. She takes her and you're like, finally, things are fucking about to pick up here.
Stuff is moving, yeah.
You know, Misery goes to save her. They all jump out and they go, oh, you're an idiot. Like, we were trying to capture the loyalists. And then you're like, the loyalists?
The loyals, yeah.
And then there's this whole useless plot line, in my opinion.
That plot line was there. It was supposed to be like a fake out. I think it was supposed to throw the reader off, but the reader kind of knows the loyals aren't shit.
The loyals don't mean anything.
Because they have the thinnest, again, it's coming back to that world building, right? Yeah. They have a really thin world building. And they're like this rival pack.
That world building is solely based on who the alpha is of the, you know, the loyals. Yep. And Lo being the alpha of the new pack.
Yeah.
And because you don't see any of it or there's no dramatic repercussions from it, for the story, it is pointless.
Yeah, it
doesn't move
it
over. And if anything, that was a whole portion that took away from the romance.
Although I feel like the point of that plot was because Misery ran out to save Anna, right?
Yeah.
And so now the pack trusts her a little bit more.
That's very true.
It's building her character within the
trust. Because
they
were like, oh, you did a really good job.
Yeah, and therefore he feels better about, Lo feels better about Misery now because Misery's gone into the sun, right, where she's burning and blistering. And saved his younger sister.
To fight a prominent wear off of Anna.
Yeah.
Because Max is like, you know.
He's not prominent. He's just some kid.
But he's in and around. Yes. Like close to Lo. Yeah. So she's gone and done.
I feel like that was the point of it. But I feel like you could get that softness or that kindness of out of Misery in a different way.
In a different way. Exactly. Yeah. So I kind of like, I liked that at first. And then I think the next time they kind of discuss the loyals with Lo, then they go into the camp. They go into the loyals camp and she gets poisoned. Do you remember that? Didn't they go into the camp? That's wild. It's a little bit later.
So they get on a plane and fly to the loyals, which I just assume is another town or city or whatever.
Meeting.
And they have like a dinner meeting and stuff. And then they leave. She gets poisoned in their own home because she eats peanut butter. And they poison the peanut butter.
Yeah, and the loyals, they think the loyals have poisoned her.
Yeah, right? Okay, yes. You're correct. Yeah. But it's really Mick. Spoilers.
It's really Mick working for fucking Councilman Lark.
Yeah.
And that sucked when Mick was revealed as a traitor because I liked Mick.
Well, you're supposed to, right?
Yeah, and that was good. You're supposed to like Mick. That was good. I will admit, I was like, you know chapter 26 where it's only like 3 pages?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, here she is showering. And then Mick knocks on the door and I was like, oh, I like Mick. Like, he's a nice guy. And then he comes in and she's like, syringe.
Yeah.
And she gets kidnapped. I was like, Mick! That actually was shocking, I will admit. That was one part I was like, oh shit, that was well done.
Do you know what really bothered me about that?
Yeah.
Okay. We love Ellie Hazelwood, by the way. Any criticisms we're giving, just because we're discussing it.
Yeah.
What I didn't like is she spends all of this time looking for Serena, her friend who's missing, and then she doesn't find Serena. She gets taken to Serena because she too is abducted.
Also, that was
funny.
And
when she finds Serena, Serena's just chilling in an attic. She's being delivered food. No one's heard her. She's reading all the classic novels. She's been there for 3 months and she is just fine.
There's a line in here which I'm going to try and find now, which I thought was so funny when she found Serena. Like, I was just like, what is this?
It's just like Serena is just chilling. There is nothing
wrong.
She
is so unbothered by like the idea of being kidnapped. And it's just like, oh, you're so right. Serena's just, she's just chilling there.
Yeah.
Like, it's so good.
Yeah. She's been gone for so long and, you know.
Yeah.
Misery spends this whole book stressed about where the fuck Serena is. And Serena's chilling.
She's totally relaxed.
Eating and reading.
It's like, Serena, I'm with Serena. Holy shit, I mumble, trying to sit up straighter. It takes 2 attempts and substantive help from her to manage a still mostly prone position. Holy shit. Why, hello. How lovely of my oldest and most treasured friend to join me in my humble abode.
She's kind of just like accepted her fate. She's like,
and she's just
stuck
chilling
here.
There, like nothing's happened. And then I think it's on this, I think I wrote it down because I was so like, what the hell? She goes, like, when she finds Serena, she's like, Yeah, Serena just existing in that room with kind of like, was kind of funny. Like, what the fuck? She's so normal, I wrote. And then on page 331, she goes, yes, this room is really well acoustically insulated.
Yeah.
Which I was like.
She's just hanging.
Fun little fact there, yeah. Serena.
Yeah.
And then they treat me really well, apart from the perpetual infringement of my human rights.
Yeah.
And she seems completely unbothered by this.
Yeah.
She's like, she's, you said, chilling. They deliver her food.
Yeah.
She's
eating.
They
don't physically harm her. They don't torture her. Yeah, they don't do anything. So what I, which is fine. I don't need this character to be mauled or anything.
Completely
but
agree.
I felt like there were no high stakes in this book.
Yeah.
There was nothing that would, like, I don't know, I just wasn't fearful for the characters. I wasn't worried about the characters. There was no higher stakes. Everything was just kind of middle ground.
Yeah, everything that drove the plot kind of never really went anywhere.
Yeah, and then
the loyals.
I feel like the end, yeah.
What?
The loyals aren't bad.
The loyals aren't bad people.
They're fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's scuffles amongst the wolves. That's fine.
And that poisoning is like when they come back. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's supposed to be like they knew that they were going over there to have a look around.
Yeah, the worst thing that happens to Misery is that she gets poisoned. And that's the only time I feel like, oh, maybe they will kill her.
Yeah.
Because even in the final conflict, right, which is, I'm not even wanting to kid, I don't think we can get into it in this, but if you read the book, it's probably the most terrible part of the book, in my opinion.
Completely agree.
It's not very well
executed.
Completely agree. But in that final thing, even there, it's like, just the stakes aren't high.
The
I want it to be a little bit more stressed.
They have those two chapters with them and Serena sitting in the, like, Misery and Serena sitting in the room where they're talking.
Yeah.
Then they escape.
Yeah.
Right? Then they go and confront the father.
Yeah.
And it is the part the whole book's been building towards.
Yeah.
But when you open that chapter, you're like, okay, now it's time for the villain to explain their entire fucking story and why they did everything. And then you open the chapter and you go, yep, here we go.
That's exactly what it
and
is.
And it's exactly
that's,
what
that's
it is.
That's villain monologue.
Villain monologue for like three pages about a plot that seemed really complex at the start that then at the end is really simple and low-key meaningless.
Yeah.
Like, didn't want the humans to find out that there were were-human half-breeds.
Because so then they would have a better connection and they would all turn against us.
And they would all turn against the vampires for no reason.
There is only one instance that she tells us about, like, previous conflict, which is where they tried an arranged marriage and all of the werewolves and the vampires, like, attacked each other.
Went to war, yeah.
But there's no actual, like, wars itself or any kind of acts of violence except, you know, if you cross the border, some of them die, I think.
Yeah.
But Lowe's just been sending them back.
Yeah.
They're not injured. He's just been booting them back over the border, which is great. It shows something about Lowe's, like, character, right?
Yeah.
But there are just no stakes
in this book. There's no stakes at all. And then they get to that whole thing, you know, villain monologue, then Lowe's there. And then she has that line, I think it's the second to last chapter, because this whole thing is wrapped up in three chapters.
Yeah.
Like,
typical romance book.
Typical romance book. But it's not. The romance isn't the focus of those last three chapters.
No, but they end on a sex scene, which I found interesting.
Which I found interesting, yeah. That is weird.
Yeah.
But, like, there's very little of Lowe and Misery's thing apart from, you know, oh, my God, she might die, and I love you, Lowe, and we've spent, you know, these last few weeks have been so amazing together.
Well, even in that instance, Lowe throws out this, you're not my... She figures out that she's Lowe's mate, right?
Yeah.
And she, after they've just had sex... She says to Lowe, I'm your mate, aren't I?
Yeah.
Because they're talking about nodding, which I don't even know if we have time to get into nodding. I feel like you have to talk about nodding if you're – how many times can I say nodding?
Nodding.
But I feel like you have to talk about it in this book because that's, another marketing factor of it.
Yeah, because the first time they have sex, they don't really have sex. Well, they do
it
have
sex.
It is sex.
Yeah.
But it's like there's no –
He's scared that because they're different species, if he knots with her, which if I'm not going to explain knotting, you'll need to Google it.
You'll need to Google that.
In
a safe space.
Oh my gosh, there's a line in there.
Which line?
He goes, I'm going to pop a knot in you.
Oh, yeah. Hang on. And there's also this line as well. Like, sorry, this is...
It pulled me right out of the novel. Yeah, I was like, I can't read any more of this.
The sex scene I thought was quite comical because there's... Like visually, right?
Yeah.
It would be how some people have sex or how some people get off. So it's totally fine that she doesn't hold back from them actually having, like, sexual interaction until they agreed to go ahead with the nodding.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So that first sex scene, I was like, this seems pretty realistic. Like, this would be how people that don't like really want to penetrate would have sex. So it made sense.
Yeah.
But there's like, oh, where is it here? It's so funny because I could just, like, just the description. So if you don't like sex, maybe you can tune out here because now it's gonna we're gonna start talking about sex.
Yeah.
So it's page 286, and it says, he is hard but also soft and doesn't want much. He guides my hand up and down once more, and beyond that, he has no instructions for me. My touch appears to be just enough, just like the rest of me. I'm going to come really fast, he puffs out. I let go of his vein with a wet pop. You don't have to. He laughs, rocking into my fist. Not much of a choice. He tightens my grip, giving himself the pressure he's craving, and then I'll show you what you really do to me. I was like, I can kind of imagine what's going on, but there's also way too much going on in this scene.
In that scene,
she's sucking onto his neck and like feeding on him because she's like, I really want you to.
Oh yeah, she drinks his blood.
Yeah, she's like, I want you to feed, misery, feed more. You must feed, and like pushes her head into his neck to feed on him.
Yeah.
And then he's just like, I'm going to come really fast. But I'm also like, where are her hands? Like, what is she touching?
What's actually going on right now? Yeah.
I just couldn't get over Pop or Not. Pop or Not. That's the last sex scene, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. The final chapter is like, it's almost like the final chapter is Ali Hazelwood being like, all right, bitches, here's the knot.
Yeah, here's the knotting. Because at the start.
Well, it's like they tie the knot at the end.
Because the thing at the start says, to Teo and Sarah, I could not do this without you and I wouldn't even want to.
Yeah.
So from the first page, before you start, you're like, knotting?
Yeah. So you get to the end and she's like, here it is, guys. I'm just going to lay it all out and then the novel's done. And he says, I'm going to pop a knot. And I just couldn't. I couldn't. It took me so long to be like, okay, I'll keep reading because I couldn't.
I love that, like, you know, when they call them mates, obviously, like your mate. And in the last one, she's like, you're staying. I feel the matter settle inside him. The sanctity of us. A different part of Lo takes over and he pushes me back onto the wall. Mate. My mate, he groans.
Oh, that's such a werewolf fan fiction thing. They like repeat like, mate while they're like, it's like mine. Like having a claim over them.
Yeah.
You belong to me or we belong to each other.
From an Australian context, it's like, mate.
Oh!
Like, it's so funny. When I was reading it, I was like, oh, I forget that this is werewolves and vampires.
You're my mate.
These are not just Australians.
Cheers, mate.
Just two like Queenslanders going, you're a mate. Yes, mate. Yeah, so wet.
You're so warm inside me, so wet,
just for my knot. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Misery, I want to live inside you.
As far as the sex scenes went, how did you feel they were?
I felt that they weren't my style of sex.
Well, no.
Damn it, I've said the wrong thing.
You are gay.
I am, and I'm not a werewolf. Spoiler. I'm not a werewolf, yeah. I'm not part animal.
No, well,
I felt
that.
Like they were written in a very fan fiction style, which was very primal and like really, really quite sexual.
Yes. Yeah.
Which I think didn't really move the plot.
Yeah.
You know, like there wasn't anything that really happened. And I think that withholding the knotting was supposed to prove that the first sex scene doesn't, you know, they could still have sex and they really like this, blah, 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 blah. And then the second, that last one is supposed to be like, now look, they've progressed and they're going to try the knotting thing and all that.
Yeah. I actually quite liked the, if you know me, in my family, definitely tune out now.
Okay.
No, but my favorite sex scenes were actually like I felt the most heat between the two characters in the aeroplane where he is quote unquote scenting her
on their way
and marking her to make her smell like him. Yeah. I found that and the scene at the same place where they get caught in the office so she drinks his blood for the first time.
Yeah.
And they're like doing that. I found those two scenes better than the sex scenes themselves.
Agreed.
I just felt like
completely agree.
Yeah.
Where the sexual tension was there.
Yes,
yeah,
because they're in
Emery's office and he's like, I can fuck you. Like, she's like, do you want me to
fuck
you? And he's like,
because
I can fuck you.
Because they're the only moments where there are stakes.
Well, yeah, that's actually
we
true.
We're going to get caught and that's we have really to, you true. Know. Or, you know, if I don't send you, then they'll be suspicious. I felt like there were stakes and it kind of spiced up the heat. Yeah. I don't know. Those
the actual sex scenes just felt like they were written for sex.
Yeah, okay.
It was written
you didn't
to
feel like there was like an emotional payoff on them?
I didn't think so, no.
Yeah.
And I felt like the language was really clunky.
Okay.
And very, like, yeah. I don't know, very fan fiction-y, and I don't want to shit on the idea of that, but I think that there are much better ways that you could write a sex scene between a werewolf and a vampire without going into the type of language that seems to just devalue both of them and their sexual experience.
Yeah, and this isn't the episode for it. If you're interested in us talking about relationships and masculinity and that, we're going to talk about that in our next episode.
Yeah.
But I found it's really hard to avoid if you're writing a werewolf fan fiction style book, novel, right? But I found the whole, like, the whole knotting and everything being around the phallus and everything kind of leading up to the phallus and penetration and the penis, right?
Yeah.
Everything leads up to that. I found it very masculine focused.
Very masculine focused.
And obviously there's a whole line as well where he, I think his fingers are in the bathtub.
Yeah.
And.
Yeah, that's like the second sexual tension scene.
Yes. Yeah. And. After that, he smells her and he goes, I can smell that you've just come. And she goes, well, yeah, I have. Mm. And then he's like, I have to eat you out. Like, I have to. It's a wear thing. He says, it's a wear thing, right? And that, I think, is trying to be like he is servicing her in this sexual moment as well. But then all of the sex leads up to this nodding. And I feel like it's very phallogocentric. And focused on the masculine and the man. And I didn't enjoy that factor.
I feel like if they had focused more on the idea, like, because I liked, this sounds weird. Tune out again if you.
Again, I've said so many words on this pod that if I've met you in person, I've never said them.
I've never said them.
Yeah.
But I liked the idea that there was a different, that they had both of their styles of having sex as like cultures and, you know, different races essentially, with her sucking on the neck,
which,
you know, turned her on and like in that capacity. I liked that. I liked
that catered towards her specific pleasure.
Need, yeah.
And that,
Then he had his, you know, specific pleasures. But for, and you're right. And then it goes to the knotting.
Yeah. And I feel like it's just kind of.
It felt a bit recessive.
Yeah.
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 Which is interesting. But they weren't bad sex scenes. They,
no, as far as sex scenes go, they wouldn't make the top 10 bad sex scenes list.
But would I read something like, you know, is this something that I look for in sex in like a romance novel?
Not particularly.
Not particularly.
Yeah.
It is very phallic-centric. I agree with you.
Yeah.
And I just think it is just, at the end of the day, just, it doesn't interest me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did want to raise something with you.
Yeah.
If you can hold that, you were about to say something.
No, I can hold this one.
I thought it was really interesting because this, I think it's interesting to talk about the fact that this is a fan fiction style thing turned into a traditional published book.
Yes.
Which is becoming more and more popular, right?
Very.
Because fan fiction authors are being picked up, like Senlin Yu, which is the author of Manacled, just got picked up from Archive of Our Own, and Manacled is being turned into Alchemized, and they're publishing that novel, right? And so you've got, you know, Love Hypothesis, which is Reylo, 50 Shades of Grey, which was Twilight, I think.
Yeah.
After Etc. by Anna Todd. And I think it's really interesting that if you look at the very beginning of fan fiction, it all starts out gay, right? Like it's gay romance.
The roots of fan
fiction
are in Slash.
Fiction.
Yeah, Slash fiction.
Yeah, which we've spoken about on the pod before. You spoke about pulp gay fiction.
Yeah.
And everything that's being traditionally published and is picking up and is getting kind of the marketing is straight fan fiction.
Yeah.
And so but all of your popular, really, 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 really popular fan fictions are often, you're gay, right?
100%.
And I found it really interesting because we had another one of our post-grads said, it's always the straight fix that get picked up. Why is it always the straight fix that get picked up? And I didn't know if you had anything to comment on that, but I thought it was really interesting.
I think it's tricky because I reckon when people, like in the current market at the moment, there is this shift towards the idea of having representation in the market. And a lot of the Slash fiction and the fan fiction that is gay is when it starts, it's very old and it is written by heterosexual white women.
Yeah.
And it is still a huge thing today that you've got queer people that are writing male and male fiction, but there are not a lot of gay men that are writing it. and writing the type of stuff that is hugely successful.
Yeah.
So I think there is hesitancy by the publishers almost, there.
Yeah, okay. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, to pull something written by this, by, you know, like a white heterosexual woman and publish it because they're going into a market which is already
It's not authentic to the genre, right?
Yeah, and I think that that's what they're worried about because that starts as like, you know, the old stuff is, yes, there's lots of stuff that are written by white, like heterosexual women and people of all genders and sexualities, but there is not an awful lot of gay men doing it.
Yeah.
So I think they're worried that they'll pull it from where it was birthed, and it starts in Pulp Fiction, which is all gay men that wrote it in the very, very early, like the 30s, the 40s and the 50s.
But you're right, now it's very white heterosexual women kind of dominate that space. I'm not saying they're the only people obviously, but they are dominating that space.
They are. So I think they're worried about pulling them and putting them into this market and then people starting to go, oh, I don't know about this.
Like, it's more a case of finding, if they're pulling fan fictions, right, finding the fan fiction that is written by, what is the word?
What, gay men?
There's a word for it, like own voice. Own voice fan fiction and publishing own voice fan fiction.
Yeah.
They're going that.
I just don't know if that type of stuff will go into the trad publishing space because they can pull, I think, gay sex that's very, you know, gay sex that's on the spice level of Ali Hazelwood's Bride is not quite yet socially acceptable to the larger heterosexual community. And I think it's because of objectification, the fetishization, and there's still a lot of internalized homophobia.
Yeah.
So I don't know if fan fiction is fucking saucy in male and male fan fiction is really, really sexy.
Yeah, it's really interesting to say that because there is a Thai drama called Pit Babe, and it's about like race car drivers, but it's set in an Amigaverse. And so there are alphas, betas, omegas, and two alphas in that, two men, they develop like a romance.
Yeah.
And it's very sexually driven. And so that's in the mainstream and that's like filmed and out there and watchable. And so I find it really interesting that it's kind of coming out. But
in Western media, we're still not quite ready for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think the drive will happen soon. I think you'll see the big push. Mm. There's a lot of stuff that are, like, I think I read an article on The Conversation the other day that said that since 2020, there's been a 740% increase in LGBTQI+ book sales in the romance spaces in particular as well. So it's booming. People are getting it out there. I don't know if the level of sex that's in the AO3 space, particularly because it's gay sex, is going to be translated across into trad publishing overly well. Yeah. I think it'd be
interesting to watch the space.
Very interesting. I think in the next 3 or 4 years, you'll see a big push for it.
Okay.
I'm just hoping that that push is led by gay men. Mm. Yeah.
Now, this might be a bit of a long episode, but I'm going to keep going.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I was going to ask what you think, actually, like, what you really liked about the book. What worked for it? What made you go, Hazelwood's done it again?
I like paranormal. So I was really intrigued by the arranged marriage. There's a lot of forced proximity in there as well.
I liked
the
forced proximity.
Yeah.
Rooms
next to each other. I found it so funny that she slept in her closet.
Yeah.
She slept in the closet. And I assume that's because there's sun coming through the window, right? And she sleeps during the day. And so she wants it blackout. Do blackout blinds not exist? Well, because she's struggling with the fact that there is so much sun in the werewolf world.
Yeah.
And even in the like vampire world and stuff, right? They have to get this this techie glass that stops all UV rays and blocks out all light and stuff so that it doesn't harm her. Do blackout blinds not exist in this world?
Yeah, that is weird actually because I kind of thought that was what she was talking about in the human world, how she just draws the curtains.
Like if she's my mate and I'm fucking obsessed with her and I notice that she's sleeping in her closet.
Yeah.
Every night. I might go, I'm going to put a blackout blind on that window so this bitch can sleep in the bed.
Thought it was kind of funny that they all kind of knew. Like, because Anna's like, where, you know, like the bed looks untouched.
Yeah, everybody knew that she slept in the closet and nobody thought we should probably fix this issue.
Nobody gave a shit.
Nobody cared. She was
and I thought, I kind of found that she was...
when the she point was where they just join her in the closet.
In the closet, yeah.
They just get in there with her.
I also thought, like, you know when she's running across the, like, the parkland, like the garden bit at the front?
Oh,
you know,
she's going she's between the trees? Yeah.
I kind of, I pictured it like the Naruto run because they say that she moves really fast, right?
I pictured like a Twilight run.
Oh, like, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I went full Naruto running because I just couldn't picture, like, she's, like, dashing between the shade.
Yeah.
And I know, it's just, it was described so weird. Yeah. And they're all, like, playing in the sun in the pool bit. Yeah, you know, and she's, like, going around doing things. It was just described a bit weird.
Look. From a fan fiction reader perspective, because I do read fan fiction and love it.
Yeah.
This was like my 12-year-old dream.
Okay.
In a trad published book. And so if I sat in my 12-year-old self and read this book, I fucking adored it.
Okay.
But me now, it wasn't particularly my cup of tea.
Yeah. I think I kind of, I expected a little bit more.
Yeah.
There wasn't quite that. I'm hoping full that if,
because there's kind of hinted at the end, right, that Serena and someone will get their own
plotline. Cohen, that's his name, right? Yeah.
And so if she does decide, like, because it's doing really well, if she does decide to go on and create a second book, I would love to see more on the world building side.
Yeah, I would like a bit more about the vampire society and how that worked.
Yeah.
And I think I want better descriptions.
Yeah.
About things.
Yeah.
I don't know if I found Lo hot, I just found him a bit disinteresting.
Yeah. And obviously, I think his description was a little bit, like wishy-washy sometimes as well. Like I picture he's got brown hair, he's really tall and huge, and his hair is buzz-cutted, right?
Yeah.
He's got a buzz cut. But then later, she's running her fingers through his hair, and so I found it really confusing to picture him. So I just pictured someone I thought was hot.
I just pictured like X-Men Professor X, like really big wooden lodge house.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
with nice walls and the
bedrooms
were comfy.
That's something I found really frustrating as well. Also, half the book takes place in the one house.
Yeah.
She's just existing in this space. I wish we'd seen more of the territory.
Yeah, because all I just pictured was that they were surrounded by a lot of woodlands.
Yeah, and more about the wolf process.
Yeah.
You see a wolf a couple times,
but only once they're wolves.
If she's quick, she could go out and run with him. I don't know if I want Twilight-esque scenes, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. Because then, they burst into the room at the end. You know, they break out of the handcuffs to confront the father.
Oh, and turn into wolves?
Yeah, and turn into wolves. And I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. And then the next chapter is like, and father's in handcuffs and the bloody battle in the room. And I was like, what the fuck? Show me how good this shit is, right?
Yeah.
This is this big, scary vampire.
This is where the stakes might be high.
And then it's like, and I watched all of my friends give their absolute all. Mm. Next chapter, battle's over, everything's organized and life's back to normal.
Yeah.
And it was just,
Do you know something I did really love about reading this?
Yeah.
At the start of every chapter, you get a sentence or two of Lo's thoughts.
Yeah, that was cool.
Of his perspective. And I really enjoyed that.
But I think that this would have been stronger if it was dual POV.
You reckon?
I really do. I think that was how you could have told us more about the Ware society. And that's how
Could you hide the fact that they're mates if you did that though?
Yeah, all depends because it would just have to be close third.
Yeah, but you can't do a close third with a first person.
Yeah, that's
I feel like the decision was so that, because she is so in the dark, you're supposed to be in the dark with her.
Yeah.
But those little snippets, without getting his full perspective, I enjoyed having kind of his little ideas of thoughts at the beginning of each chapter.
It was a clever way to start it, because you kind of then understood, because the thoughts were from what were exactly how he was going to be thinking, or what he was thinking spread out. And when you put them all together, it's quite obvious that, he's like, I like this bitch.
Yeah.
And I like her a lot. And I think there's something going on here that we should fix.
Yeah.
But all in all, I am very glad that I read it. I would not have picked it up unless we were doing a review for it. But yeah. I'm glad that I read it.
Oh, same.
Because for I was sure. like, this is a step away from Ali Hazelwood's like standard concepts. Mm. It is a very similar, like we've said, to a lot of her previous work.
Yeah.
But it was cool to see it put into a different setting and in a different...
And there are like, a lot of people that I would recommend this book to.
There are,
like, there is
yes,
a huge market for this book, whether fair. It's not you or I, but yeah. it's just
I am
huge.
Not surprised that the reviews are so good. Yeah. That she's 4.2 with over 26,000 reviews.
Yeah.
Because Ali Hazelwood is an icon in romance at the moment. She churns out work like no tomorrow.
Mm.
The work is, it is high quality. Like, it's not, like you said, we're not the market for this.
No.
Well, I'm not the market. I'm definitely not the market.
No, I'm like semi-market.
You're a bit closer to
the
market.
I'm a Wattpad reader turned snob, you know?
She's a bloody genius for putting this book out because, like you said, it is hugely popular. There's a massive market for it. The readership is very, very devout and interested. Mm. And she's turned this idea of getting fan fiction into trad publishing and breaking down those barriers. And she's breaking them down really, really well by putting books out like this that people are going crazy for. So there's not much else to say apart from the fact that Ali Hazelwood, you're a bloody genius. And I'm trying to find out who the publisher is. And the publisher is, it was Berkeley.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is obviously, an imprint of Penguin Random House.
Now, we can probably wrap it up here.
Yeah, I think we can wrap it up here.
Considering we've gone a little over time.
We have indeed.
But you know what? I feel like we could do that with book clubs.
I think we should with
book
clubs.
I feel like we might do a regular book club.
There's no point in us like holding back when we're doing a book club and going, 55 minutes when we were going to talk about the penis, so we shall stop now. No. Like,
right? You have to talk about the knotting.
Yeah, you have to talk about the knotting. Get the cock in there. Get it in the pod is what
get
I should be saying.
Pod,
get it in the pod.
Yes. That is now the title of this episode.
Get the cock in there.
Get the cock in there. You've got to talk about the nutting. On that note, we'll wrap it up here. We don't have another book planned yet, but I think maybe 2-3 monthly we'll do a book.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
I think it's good. I think we can give a little hint maybe
in our
next couple
episodes.
I feel
like we should do a gay romance next.
We can do a gay romance next.
Yeah, because you as the local expert.
Yeah, let's get some queers in there.
Yeah, we should do a queer romance. So
it's a good one.
We will pick something.
I'll pick a goodie.
Yeah, pick a goodie and we will do that here as well. I hope you read with us and enjoyed it. And I will put up a poll at some point and you can tell us what you thought of Bride.
Of Bride, yeah.
If you read it with us.
And if you've listened to this entire episode and have not read the book, we are so goddamn sorry. But still read the book because there's a lot more in there than what we've spoken about.
Exactly. And you know what? I love to listen to podcast reviews where they spoil absolutely everything and then I still go and read the book and still love the book.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't mind spoilers.
Because then you're not focusing on the idea of exactly where the plot is going on.
Exactly.
You're focusing on how it's done.
Yeah.
And that's what us writers love to do.
Exactly. So... Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you.
And we will chat to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.